Chapter 55. By the 13th of May our ship was ready to sail, and the next day we were out in the open sea, on our way to Auschwitz. The weather was very clear and fine, but so intolerably cold, that we were obliged to keep on our fur clothing. For some days we had very little wind. It was not till the 19th, that a brisk gale from the northwest sprang up. An uncommon large whale, the body of which was larger than the ship itself, lay almost at the surface of the water, but was not perceived by anyone on board till the moment when the ship, which was in full sail, was almost upon him, so that it was impossible to prevent its striking against him. We were thus placed in the most imminent danger, as this gigantic creature, setting up its back, raised the ship 3 feet at least out of the water. The masts reeled, and the sails fell altogether, while we who were below all sprang instantly upon the deck, concluding that we had struck upon some rock. Instead of this, we saw the monster sailing off with the utmost gravity and solemnity. Captain Wolfe applied immediately to the pumps to examine whether or not the vessel had received any damage from the shock, but we found that very happily it had escaped entirely uninjured. Now, the Captain Wolfe he alluded to as commanding the ship in question, is a New Englander, who, after a long life of unusual adventures as a sea captain, this day resides in the village of Dorchester near Boston. I have the honor of being a nephew of his. I have particularly questioned him concerning this passage in Langsdorff. He substantiates every word. The ship, however, was by no means a large one. A Russian craft built on the Siberian coast, and purchased by my uncle, after bartering away the vessel in which he sailed from home. In that up and down manly book of old-fashioned adventure, so full too, of honest wonders, The Voyage of Lionel Wafer, one of ancient Dampier's old chums, I found a little matter set down so like, that just quoted from Langsdorff, that I cannot forbear inserting it here for a corroborative example, if such be needed. Lionel, it seems, was on his way to own Ferdinando, as he calls the modern Juan Fernandes. En our way thither, he says, about 4 o'clock in the morning, when we were about 150 leagues from the main of America, our ship felt a terrible shock, which put our men in such consternation, that they could hardly tell where they were, or what to think. But everyone began to prepare for death. And, indeed, the shock was so sudden and violent, that we took it for granted the ship had struck against a rock. But when the amazement was a little over, we cast the lead, and sounded, but found no ground. The suddenness of the shock, made the guns leap in their carriages, and several of the men, were shaken out of their hammocks. Captain Davis, who lay with his head on a gun, was thrown out of his cabin. Lionel then goes on to impute the shock to an earthquake, and seems to substantiate the imputation by stating that a great earthquake, somewhere about that time, did actually do great mischief along the Spanish land. But I should not much wonder if, in the darkness of that early hour of the morning, the shock was after all caused by an unseen whale vertically bumping the hull from beneath. I might proceed with several more examples, one way or another known to me, of the great power and malice at times of the sperm whale. In more than one instance, he has been known, not only to chase the assailing boats back to their ships, but to pursue the ship itself, and long withstand all the lances hurled at him from its decks. The English ship Pusey Hall can tell a story on that head. And, as for his strength, let me say, that there have been examples, where the lines attached to a running sperm whale have, in a calm, been transferred to the ship, and secured there, the whale towing her great hull through the water, as a horse walks off with a cart. Again, it is very often observed that, if the sperm whale, once struck, is allowed time to rally, he then acts, not so often with blind rage, as with willful, deliberate designs of destruction to his pursuers. Nor is it without conveying some eloquent indication of his character, that upon being attacked he will frequently open his mouth, and retain it in that dread expansion for several consecutive minutes. but I must be content with only one more and a concluding illustration, a remarkable and most significant one, by which you will not fail to see that not only is the most marvelous event in this book corroborated by plain facts of the present day, but that these marvels, like all marvels, are mere repetitions of the ages. So that for the millionth time we say Amen with Solomon, verily there is nothing new under the sun. In the 6th Christian century lived Procopius, a Christian magistrate of Constantinople, in the days when Justinian was emperor and Belisarius general. As many know, he wrote the history of his own times, a work every way of uncommon value. By the best authorities, he has always been considered a most trustworthy and unexaggerating historian, except in some one or two particulars, not at all affecting the matter presently to be mentioned. Now, in this history of his, Procopius mentions that, during the term of his prefecture at Constantinople, a great sea monster was captured in the neighboring Propontis, or Sea of Marmora, after having destroyed vessels at intervals in those waters for a period of more than 50 years. A fact thus set down in substantial history cannot easily be gainsaid. Nor is there any reason it should be. Of what precise species this sea monster was, is not mentioned. But as he destroyed ships, as well as for other reasons, he must have been a whale, and I am strongly inclined to think a sperm whale. And I will tell you why. For a long time I fancied that the sperm whale had been always unknown in the Mediterranean, and the deep waters connecting with it. Even now I am certain that those seas are not, and perhaps never can be, in the present constitution of things, a place for his habitual gregarious resort. But further investigations have recently proved to me that in modern times there have been isolated instances of the presence of the sperm whale in the Mediterranean. I am told, on good authority, that on the Barbary coast, a Commodore Davis of the British Navy found the skeleton of a sperm whale. Now, as a vessel of war readily passes through the Dardanelles, hence a sperm whale could, by the same route, pass out of the Mediterranean into the Propontis. In the Propontis, as far as I can learn, none of that peculiar substance called brit is to be found, the element of the right whale. But I have every reason to believe that the food of the sperm whale, squid or cuttlefish lurks at the bottom of that sea, because large creatures, but by no means the largest of that sort, have been found at its surface. If, then, you properly put these statements together, and reason upon them a bit, you will clearly perceive that, according to all human reasoning, Procopius a sea monster, that for half a century stove the ships of a Roman emperor, must in all probability have been a sperm whale. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.